Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
I'm Roland Martin. Today on News One Now, Don Lemon, Juan Williams, Bill O'Reilly. What the hell is wrong with them? Can they not Google? Why is it they don't understand the reality of Black Lives Matter? I'm going to take mainstream media to school. That's right, class 101, to get them to understand, now no lie zone, the reality and the truth about Black Lives Matter. Also on the show, we'll talk to an author and two players profiled in a new book about the Black players who integrated the Syracuse football team during the Civil Rights era. America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens breaks down how to invest in these turbulent times in today's Wealthy You segment, plus Tori Hart on her new TV show and new mixed drink line. It's time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. Everybody seems to have an opinion regarding Black Lives Matter. You listen to these mainstream news folks, you swear they don't know how to actually do any research. Last week, I blasted Bill O'Reilly of Fox News for lying about Black Lives Matter on the air. Juan Williams, who joined him, said they had no agenda. We also busted out that lie. Well, guess who now joins the lie? And that's why we have this no-lie zone. It's CNN anchor Don Lemon. Here's Don last week talking with Rashad Turner of a St. Paul, Minnesota chapter of Black Lives Matter.
What is the end game of Black Lives Matter if you don't want to involve in the political process when so many things have come together to help your particular cause?
Well, see, the end game is for us to stop being killed, for us to stop being beat.
But how does that happen then?
There's all this talk.
The question, I want to be very respectful of you, but how does that happen without legislation, without being involved in the political or the legislative process? It doesn't just happen from yelling.
It doesn't happen from yelling without being involved in the political process. Don, do you have the capacity to actually use Google? See, this is what happens when you sit in the office all day and you don't do any real reporting. Now, I'm going to pull up for you a column that Juan Williams of Fox News wrote in the Hill newspaper. This is on their website, thehill.com. Scroll up, please. Here's the column, okay? And in this particular column, Juan Williams actually says the following, which is stunning. It is as if he also doesn't know how to research. And I know Juan, and I like Juan. But for some reason, he gets it wrong. He says that they're playing with fire. In the opening line, Black Lives Matter is fast becoming its own worst enemy. He says it lacks an agenda. It is antagonizing the Black community's top white political allies, including Democrats running for the party's 2016 presidential nomination. And it is not finding common ground with any of the Republican majority in Congress. He then goes on to say, in the same piece here, the movement's failure to get its collective act together carries real danger for the political clout of African Americans in the 2016 election. But check this out. This is hilarious. He says in this piece that they have failed to connect with Latinos. Quote, they're not finding common cause with Latinos. He then goes on to say that they also are not involved in what's happening in Congress. He lays out in terms of what they should be backing. He ends it by saying they should be lobbying Congress, holding voter registration drives, quizzing candidates on their plan for sentencing reform, but don't heckle the candidates and incite violence by calling for cop killing. The movement could be critical to securing and mobilizing Black support for criminal justice reform that actually would improve Black lives. What Juan Williams wrote is a flat-out lie. It simply isn't the truth. The fact of the matter is, folks in the Black Lives Matter movement are doing that. Now, let me teach Juan and teach Don and teach Bill about Black Lives Matter. First of all, understand this. Black Lives Matter, folks, started as a hashtag in 2013 after George Zimmerman was acquitted of killing Trayvon Martin. The founders of Black Lives Matter, Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, Opal Tometi. Now, that was the hashtag. It evolved into a series of organizations. There are some 25 chapters right now that are autonomous of the National Black Lives Matter organization. But here's the piece all these media folks don't seem to understand. When you talk about Black Lives Matter, it's not really one entity. That's why it is called a movement. In fact, there are numerous organizations that utilize the calling card Black Lives Matter. In essence, it was a simple three-word statement that summed up the feelings of so many African Americans who were outraged to see African Americans who were dying and justice not being done. That's the reality of Black Lives Matter. But let me walk y'all through this here, okay? This is real simple. When you talk about these various organizations, pull them up, please. Here's the deal. You've got Black Lives Matter Network, the Dream Defenders, which first of all came out of the Trayvon Martin killing in 2012. You got Black Youth Project 100, Million Hoodies Movement for Justice, Black Alliance for Just Immigration. Go to the next one, please. You have Color of Change, Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, Project South, Southerners for On New Ground, Organization for Black Struggle out of St. Louis. Next graphic, please. Advancement Project, Baltimore Algebra Project, Center for Constitutional Rights, the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, the Ohio Students Association. Next graphic, please. You have Rise Up Georgia, Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, Center for Popular Democracy, Ferguson Action. These are the groups, folks, who are very much involved in the Black Lives Matter movement. Again, not one organization, not one entity that's involved with it. Now, I laid out this criticism. You heard Don actually say this nonsense, you're not involved in the political process. Well, check this out. The reality is the Black Lives Matter folks did reject, they did reject what was stated from the Democratic National Committee when they passed a resolution trying to agree with their various agenda. But here's what Don Lemon didn't tell you. What he did not tell you was the reason they rejected the resolution. Black Lives Matter activists have not been checking out of the political process. They've been involved in the political process. This is a statement on the Black Lives Matter website, Facebook page, from Sunday, August 30th, 2015. Shelley, pull up my iPad, please. This is what it says. A resolution signaling the Democratic National Committee's endorsement that Black Lives Matter in no way implies an endorsement of the DNC by the Black Lives Matter Network, nor was it done in consultation with us. You hear what I'm saying? Wasn't done with this. They also say, more specifically, the Black Lives Matter Network is clear that a resolution from the Democratic National Committee won't bring the changes we seek. Resolutions without concrete change are just business as usual. Promises are not policies. All right, now, let me walk you through this as well. Juan Williams said there's no agenda. Juan Williams said they aren't involved in terms of policy, lobbying. Don Lemon says, oh, you guys are out here just yelling. Now, again, if you know how to use Google, which we do here at TV One, this is what you clearly understand. And that is, there are various solutions that have been offered by numerous groups. Join CampaignZero.org, a group of activists involved in the Black Lives Matter movement, they actually have put together. Shelley, pull up my iPad, please. Folks, do you see what it says? Solutions. Let me scroll on up. Here are 10 policy solutions. End broken windows policing, community oversight, limit use of force, independently investigate and prosecute, community representation, body cams, film the police, training, end for-profit policing, demilitarization, fair police union contracts. Okay, inside of those 10 are a total of 33 specific policies. Now that's just joincampaignzero.org. There are other organizations as well. The New York Justice League, they also have their very clear list of demands. They are one of the groups and that falls under, if you will, this notion of Black Lives Matter. This is on their website. We demand the following. And it says immediate action. The immediate firing of Officer Daniel Pantaleo, who killed Eric Garner. The state of New York will appoint a special prosecutor. Guess what happened? Governor Andrew Cuomo signed that executive order. So they actually pressured the governor to do that. Hey, Don Lemon, that's called being involved in the political process. The city and state of New York draft legislation to clarify the rules of engagement. New York City created a comprehensive NYPD training program, an immediate end to NYPD's broken windows policing, an end to the criminalization of young people in the New York school system. U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder expedite the federal investigation into the death of Eric Garner. Immediate passage of the Right to Know Act. New York State and all localities engage in complete transparency. We call on Mayor Bill de Blasio, Governor Andrew Cuomo, and New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman to meet with the New York Justice League to deal with all these issues. Folks, this is public policy. And so what Juan Williams wrote is a lie. What Don Lemon said is a lie. What Bill O'Reilly said is a lie. What this proves is they know nothing about Black Lives Matter. They know nothing about the activism that's going on by these various groups. They don't even bother to have these folks on the show. Now, the gentleman, Rashad Turner, that was only his third national media appearance, and he's out of St. Paul, Minnesota. He's not involved in some of these national dialogues that are going on. Oh, just one more thing. Ferguson Action, another entity. Guess what? Shelly, go to my iPad, please. These are their demands. They list the demands on their website. It's very clear. It deals with housing, deals with education, it deals with jobs, prison industrial complex. They also have national demands. They have their, you can also download the demands. And so what I don't understand, how can journalists like Juan Williams and Don Lemon and Bill O'Reilly call themselves journalists when they can't even do basic fundamental research? On this show on TV One, we have interviewed numerous activists involved in Black Lives Matter. In fact, some of them are even calling this the Movement for Black Lives. What you see, folks, is a clear intent to destroy what has been going on, a clear intent to delegitimize the activism going on. What Juan Williams has to understand is the actions to change the policies in America don't just happen in this building that you can see behind me. It happens in state capitals. It happens in city hall, in county commissioner's court. So what I would hope, mainstream media, since I'm now taking you to school to understand this, that you actually do some research and stop thinking that somehow there's one organization and one leader you can call to understand this Black Lives Matter movement or this movement for Black Lives. What is clear is most of you are clueless because you can't do any basic reporting. Coming up next, I'll talk with my panel about this particular issue and what has to be done to change the narrative and deal with the truth when it comes to Black Lives Matter. 12 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, don't forget, September 14th, that is next Monday, News One Now moves to 7 a.m. That's right, 7 a.m., no longer 9 a.m. And I know, I'm sorry, my West Coast folks, it's going to be 4 a.m. where you are. But do me a favor, set your DVR so as soon as you wake up, you can catch the show. So beginning September 14th, News One Now on TV One moves to 7 a.m. So please tell a friend, catch your DVR, and then we're going to have a little fun early in the morning right here on TV One. Back in a moment. Folks, Officer Stephen Rankin has been arrested and charged for the shooting death of 18-year-old unarmed William Chapman. In April, Rankin responded to a shoplifting call at Walmart in Portsmouth, Virginia, and got into a struggle with Chapman. He was shot in the face and chest, had no alcohol or drugs in his system, and his pockets were turned inside out. Rankin is also charged with the use of a firearm in commission of a felony. He has been released on $75,000 bond. A police officer in Lake Arthur, Louisiana, is fired after attending a KKK rally in North Carolina over the summer. Officer Raymond Mott says he was attending an anti-immigration rally in the photo and that the picture speaks for itself. Yeah, he's wearing a Klan uniform doing the Nazi salute. Mott says he wants his job back because the Lake Arthur City Council didn't follow proper protocol in firing him. Now I want to bring in our panel. Joining me today, Jameer Burley, senior campaigner at Amnesty International USA, Douglas Sloan, co-founder of the National Capital Strategy Group, Michelle Bernard, CEO of the Bernard Center for Women. All right, folks, so you saw me break down Black Lives Matter. And what I don't understand is just the flat-out blatant lies from Don Lemon, from Juan Williams, from Bill O'Reilly. And to me, Google is pretty easy to use. Yeah. And so either they are wholly ignorant, Either they want to live in denial or they desire to do the dirty work of folks to discredit exactly what's happening in locals, in cities across the country, as well as what's happening nationally.
I would fully agree. I think it's easy. The information is so readily available on every platform you look at if you really wanted clear answers. But I think they're catering to a population of people who want to deny that the Black Lives Matter movement actually has not only legitimate concerns, but legitimate recommendations for moving forward. And so I think the jobs of journalists, unfortunately, are becoming extremely useless because they're not doing actual research work that gives the American public real information.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I found Join Campaign Zero online last night when I Googled it. I didn't have any problems seeing all of their realistic and tangible demands that they listed on their website. I will side with Don Lemon in the fact that I would like to see them engage more in the legislative process.
But they are.
They are.
Okay, but when you say what does that mean? What does that mean?
I would like to see them take full on the fact that they need to need to implement legislation to see these changes happen.
New York Justice League did a march from New York to Washington, D.C. and present a list of demands to members of Congress. I was there. I was there actually at the news conference. In fact, this is also what happened. Pull this up, Shelley, in 1 second when I have it up. Philip Agnew wrote a piece in The Guardian in August of 2015. This is the headline: "What President Obama Told Me About Ferguson's Movement, Think Big But Go Gradual." In the particular piece here, he talked about the meeting that took place with Ashley Yates, Brittany Packnett, T-Dubbo, Rasheen Aldridge, James Hayes, Jose Lopez, and Philip. Now, what's also interesting about this here, he said in the particular piece, and I'm going to pull up right here, what they told the president. He told them, "We asked the president to utilize his pulpit to spark the governmental culture shift that this movement calls for. We told him to end the Department of Defense's 1033 program, to end federal funding to police departments with histories of discrimination, harassment, and murder. We beseech President Obama to invest in community-based alternatives to policing and incarceration and challenge him on the lack of data on the state's systematic and underreported killings of unarmed Black and Latino people." They were talking to the president of the United States. But that's policy.
Look, it's policy. I'm going to take a step back, though. Let's assume that there was no policy behind Black Lives Matter. The fact alone that they have engaged in such an amazing public awareness campaign, particularly at a time in the civil rights history of this country, 50 years post everything, post Brown versus Board, post this, this, and that. We have people who are constantly not members of the Black community who are saying, who are the leaders of the Black movement? And, you know, people constantly have negative comments about Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and leaders of the quote-unquote traditional civil rights movement. We have young people who have started a campaign worldwide that has international recognition with three very simple words, and we have people on the Democratic side and the Republican side who cannot say Black Lives Matter. But to have two Black people.
But my concern is,
I'm confused. 40 laws have been passed in 24 states in the last year. Congressman Bobby Scott had a law when it came to reporting people who were killed in police presence that was passed in the House in 2013. He told me personally on this show that it wasn't for the protesters, the Senate would not have passed in 2014. That's public policy.
I know, and I think the biggest concern is that people assume that these young people are doing the traditional, or getting involved the traditional way that legislation was previously passed. And also, one of the things I would throw out is that a lot of assumption is that these young people have just gotten involved in the last 3 years. These are young people who have been a part of organizations, working for companies,
dealing with Trayvon, going back to Genesis 6,
doing the work. They're engaged, and now they're building organizations because they recognize the work needs to now be more reflective in policy, and they're demanding.
And even with
changes.
New laws being passed, I mean, the bottom line is, in all 50 states, murder has always been illegal. However, what we've seen is that when you shoot and kill an unarmed Black man,
right,
current laws
or woman.
The laws don't matter. They are doing exactly what they need to do. If the public wasn't aware of what was happening first, none of the laws would matter.
Douglas, this is the mistake, and I hear your point. This is the mistake, I think, what you just said and Juan Williams did. This is not the 60s where the change is going to happen with Congress. The reality is the laws have to be changed in individual states, in individual cities. And so the we are used to folks petitioning Congress. No, what Congress is going to do, some small changes, but you can't get a special prosecutor unless you get the state to act.
Agreed.
You can't get the grand jury reform unless the state act. And that's what I think was happening is most of the work is on a local level, and you're not seeing that every day versus what happens here in D.C.
Well, what
and
am
I understand what you're saying, and don't get me wrong, the Black Lives Movement has been tremendous in bringing attention to this issue of we have regarding disparate treatment of Black men and women at the hands of the police. However, I am very wary and very concerned about this movement kind of, you know, taking on that whole Occupy Wall Street movement.
No,
that grew and grew, and then all that,
no,
you know, it,
no,
it didn't
the
have
reason,
a singular voice.
But that's the thing.
And we didn't have a tangible list of demands. Now, obviously, we see a tangible list of demands here.
But here's the deal, though.
But
even a civil rights movement, there was no singular voice. You had MLK with SCLC. Okay. You had Whitney Young with National Urban
that's
League.
Right, that's
Roy
right.
Roy Wilkins, NAACP.
You had clearly defined organization.
I just listed organizations.
Why is it that Black people have to have a singular head and no
right.
one else does? If we look at the way social media is dealing with social justice issues all around the world, from the Arab Spring to I Am Jada to Bring Back Our Girls, the movements are so completely different
Jameer,
than they should be.
I don't want to say that the movement is definitely different, but also the importance is allow young people to decide who are their leaders, and it's not going to be one singular person. We have a multitude of organizations, but also the organizations are not, you don't have to be a part of an organization to have your voice heard or be a part of the process, and we've seen that happen, and change is happening without it.
Hold tight one second. I got to go to a break. We'll come back. We'll continue the conversation. I was going to play you the Tori Hart package about her new special. We're going to bump that. I want to continue this conversation. Also, later in the show, we'll talk with the authors of the Syracuse book about the Syracuse football team and how they integrated that team during the 60s. Also, we'll talk with Deborah Owens, America's Wealth Coach, right here on News 1 Now on TV One.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Jameer Burley, also Douglas Sloan, and Michelle Bernard. This idea, first of all, I think Black folks need to let go of the civil rights movement. And what I mean by let go, understand that model, how that worked. What happens today is different. You can learn from it, you can glean, you can take some things, but it's not going to look the exact same because this movement here is totally different because it literally is a state by state, city by city strategy, which is actually even more difficult than trying to get Congress to pass one law.
Yeah, and I understand that. And of course, it's going to look different because you have the advent of social media. Young people operate in totally different ways than they used to back in the day. You know, half the time regarding the civil rights movement, things were done in a different way. But when I was talking about legislative, I just wasn't talking about at the congressional level. Of course, you have to engage at the state level, at the local level. All of that is critical. But, I mean, who leads the Black Lives Matter movement in Maryland? Who leads the Black Lives Matter movement in Virginia? Who leads the Black Lives Matter movement in D.C.? I'm fuzzy on all of that. When I say singular voice, I'm not just talking about one person. I would like to see a little bit more organization out of the movement
so that we can actively engage in what they're doing because
the movement has done a fantastic job.
How did 40 laws get passed in 24 states?
Oh, they did a fantastic job. I'm not taking away from all
okay,
that. I'm not saying that the movement is not doing its job. I just like to see a little bit more organization,
okay.
And I love the fact that we do have some tangible, realistic demands from the group.
Is putting the face on it going to make you more comfortable that these issues are important? Like, is putting the organization name on it going to make you more comfortable that changes actually happen? The fact that the movement is not singular allows for change to happen across the board and allows for the other side not to really attack any one person.
Here's the thing, Michelle. We've seen them try to take down Philip Agnew with the Dream Defenders, try to take down Ray McKesson, try to take down Sean King, try to take down a number of different people, and the problem is they're like, dang, it's like baby kids. They keep multiplying.
They do, and you know, and rather than particularly the Black press, I feel like we have an obligation not to focus on, not to say to ignore, but not to focus on organizational, perceived organizational problems. Let's look at what they're doing outside of the laws. What other movement have you seen in recent times that could get a presidential candidate, i.e. in this circumstance, Hillary Clinton, on videotape saying that despite the fact that people have always said that her husband was the first black president, that she is going to go talk to white people who care about the issue?
Well, not only that, Michelle, it goes even further than that. The reason people cannot keep trying to bring up Occupy Wall Street, because one, there have been tangible results.
Mm-hmm.
Two, to have the DNC pass its resolution that gets rejected.
Yes.
To have the candidates. First of all, Senator Bernie Sanders had no social justice platform. He was forced to get one. Hillary Clinton was forced to give a speech pretty much denouncing everything her husband did when it came to criminal justice.
Yes.
That doesn't happen without the pressure being applied in the streets.
By a very real and legitimate organization.
Doesn't happen.
Yeah. And I applaud them 110%. I just want to know who to call when I want to engage.
Here's the deal. But here's the deal. You keep saying, who do you want to call? I just gave you 15 groups. Take your pick.
And all,
no,
and
matter of fact,
have,
matter of fact, where
is there,
Douglas?
Is there a
Douglas,
leader of the Black Lives
Douglas,
Movement in those places that
Douglas,
I can call?
It's
Dream,
a movement.
Douglas.
I know.
Different groups. Here's St. Louis. Here's Florida. Here's Georgia. Here's Baltimore.
Tell me
here's Ohio. Here's California. Here's New York City. Bruh,
yeah,
take your pick.
Roland.
I want D.C. and Maryland.
Well, you know what?
That's what I want.
All right. Okay.
That's what I want.
Call the investment project. No. Call the investment project.
He doesn't even have to do that. Douglas, all you have to do is take a Sharpie and
call
write
the
Black
investment
Lives
project.
Matter and go out with your own platform.
You said Maryland. You said Maryland. Douglas, you said Maryland, bruh. Call Baltimore Algebra Project. They're in Maryland.
Right. I was...
No, you said Maryland.
You know, I did say Maryland. I said D.C.
Baltimore's
too.
In Maryland.
Actually, I do know. I was engaging a little bit of devil's advocate there.
Yeah.
I know who the head of the D.C. chapter is of Black Lives Matter in D.C.
Okay.
So I know the person.
We'll call Erica Tiny.
No. That's a problem. You say you know who the leader of the movement is for one city. There are 10 chapters of different organizations in the city, and they would probably disagree with your assumption of who you know is the leader of that organization, of the movement.
Who do I call? You're right, because I'm mistaken.
Okay.
I was under the impression I was looking at one person.
One name.
I was
okay,
looking at
fine.
One person, Eugene
who?
Pierier. That was a guy that I was
okay.
Call.
Here's the deal. Call,
she just
Hold on,
enlightened
Douglas.
Me.
Call Erica Totten.
Yep.
She's in D.C.
Okay.
That's one. You asked for one.
I know. Oh, I got more than one.
Okay.
I got more than one.
But don't
is
answer.
That, is that conducive to the movement when we have so many different people?
Why?
That's what I was talking about when I said singular voice.
There's no sense. Michelle, go ahead.
I am at a loss for words. I cannot understand the focus on organizational, you know, the organizational structure of the Black Lives Movement and who is in charge on a state-by-state basis. It doesn't really matter. All that matters is that they are being effective, that our sons and our daughters can be gunned down in almost any state in the country without any repercussions
whatsoever.
So here's
what we're going to do. Here's
so the movement is all right. Whoever is stepping out.
So here's what we're going to do. Saying, okay, Douglas, you want that? People keep asking it. Here's what we're going to do at News 1 Now. I'm going to put together a state-by-state list, okay? I'm going to give you...
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And when I find
exactly
one in Montana...
About.
But here's the deal, Douglas. You could have said I'll put it together. No, but you're asking somebody else to do it.
I thought I knew the person I was going to call.
I will volunteer to put it together
it
with
probably
you.
Already
got it.
Post it
precisely.
And disseminate it.
Precisely.
It already exists.
And if it doesn't,
by issue too.
Then we'll reach out.
Yeah. And that way, we could take that one off the table. All right, hold on one second. Folks, two players who integrated the Syracuse football team shared their struggles for equality. We'll talk to them next. Also, we'll chat with America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens about how to invest in this turbulent market. 23 before top of the hour, News 1 Now TV.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
the late 1960s, eight black players integrated the Syracuse University football team, but instead of being treated like team members, they were treated like pariahs. Author David Mark recounts their struggles in his new book, Leveling the Playing Field, the story of the Syracuse Eight. He joins us on Skype with former player Larry Martin and also former player Clarence Bucky McGill joins us in studio. So David, you talk about integrating the Syracuse team in the 60s. Were they not integrated before that with black players?
Yes, in fact, Syracuse was a pioneering school in integrating its intercollegiate athletics. But that ended up being part of the problem because everybody thought there would be no problems. It's one of the things that lured the students to come here. This was the school of Jim Brown and Ernie Davis. And then when they got here, the coach's attitude was, after all I've done for you, and then he treated them terribly.
So, Bucky, talk about this here, because being one of those players, what was it like? Because again, he's absolutely right. When you look at movies today, it is as if Syracuse was this oasis of integration.
Well, when we entered Syracuse in the late 60s, we found a lot of problems in terms of equality that was not there. For 20 years, from 1950 probably to 1970, most black athletes, particularly black football players, were told not to go out with white girls. If you went out with white girls, you were punished by not playing. And, you know, also they got into your personal life. We thought that was, you know, a terrible thing. We were told not to think like black men. They said you are a football player first, and you're a black, and whatever else you want to be second. Those are quotes from our famous coach, Ben Swartzwelder, who was like the Nick Saban during our time, during the late 60s. We were told we didn't have equal academic access. Mm-hmm. Coaches were our academic advisors versus, you know, somebody out of the education department. So as high school students, and we had some pretty good athletes coming in that were black, that were honor roll students, but they were told to take tennis, basketball, football, etc.
Larry, it's interesting listening to Bucky talk about that. It sounds like he's talking about Division I-A schools today.
Perhaps so, but you said something earlier that wasn't correct. I wasn't on the team. I'm part of the university, and my office is involved with the Syracuse 8 issue, bringing it forth and also helping these young men get the due that was credit for the bold and courageous action that they took. So,
Larry, why is it important for Syracuse to tell this story today?
I think it's extremely important because it's part of our history, and the action that they took, every program in the country now has positions based on ability. They have integrated coaching staff. They have better medical treatment. They also have better academic advising. So it showed that these guys took a stand, and as a result of the stand that they took, Syracuse and many other schools across the country are far better in terms of their academic programs and also helping to move forward in terms of black and Latinos in athletics.
Michelle?
My question is, when they said to you, don't think like a black man, like, what exactly did they mean by that? What was thinking like a black man?
Well, during that time, as you may know, the late 60s, it was civil disobedience, civil rights, and there was there was a lot of movement towards equal rights. And being involved in that as a black student, like most black students at that time, the administration and the coaching staff wanted you to shun away from dealing with any perspective of you being a black person and you being involved in a black movement. We also, as Larry mentioned, we wanted a black coach. I mean, now it's pretty common, but in those days, you know, we did not have a black coach, and we wanted somebody to relate to that would, you know, hear our pleas in terms of, you know, equal playing time, in terms of, as I mentioned, academic advising, and you know, in terms of our medical treatment. We had a doctor who was head of our medical staff was a gynecologist. And he was
just saying it may not work for football players. Yeah.
And he was quoted, Doc Pillow was quoted to say, I hate touching black people.
Wow. David, I got to ask you this real quick, about 30 seconds. I asked every book author this. What was your one wow moment during the research for this book that caused you to just go, wow, I can't believe this?
Well, when I discovered that the team doctor was a gynecologist, that's because I found his obituary in an obscure local newspaper from, from 60, 70 years ago. And he was the former head of the New York State Association of Gynecologists. So he was a good gynecologist, but he was a gynecologist.
Wow. Folks, the book is called Leveling the Playing Field, The Story of the Syracuse Eight, by David Mark and Jim Brown. The great Jim Brown wrote the foreword for the book. I would certainly appreciate David, Larry, and Bucky joining us right here on News 1 TV1. Thanks
Thank
a bunch.
You. Appreciate
Folks,
it.
When we come back, America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens has tips to make the best out of the stock market during these turbulent times. It's 13 before top of the hour. News 1 Now on TV1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is, when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuse after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
All right, folks, knowing when to invest in the stock market can be confusing. You know, stock market is highly volatile right now. Some of y'all are freaking out like, oh, no, I ain't put my money in. But America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens said, that's pretty dumb for you to think that way. Yes, she did say dumb. She joins us right now. All right, Deborah, so again, people are freaking out, and you always say, look, when the market goes way, way down, that's the time to jump on that thing.
Absolutely. Well, here's the picture that I want to paint for people, right? Let's put everything in perspective. The market in August, all indexes were down. The S&P, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, down more than 6%. But the reality is, if you talk to a lot of analysts, they'll say that a lot of that was program trading from hedge funds with a gazillion dollars that, based on the market movement, it automatically starts selling or buying stocks. And that's when you see those types of swings, 500 points one day, 500 down the next day. But the point that I want to make for folks is that Warren Buffett says it the best. His quote, be fearful when people are greedy and be greedy when people are fearful. And so what that requires, I mean, it sounds good in practice, right? But what that requires really is knowledge, right, of how the markets work so that you don't get caught up in the emotion. And, you know, we're looking at China. I can recall a year ago, everyone was saying, oh, yeah, China's going to be the growth engine, right? And now, look at me now, right? And so for most people who are investing, they're investing through their retirement plans every month. They're investing systematically. And so what I hope to give them today is a little calm in this storm that we're having.
So you say buy low, sell high, and problems are opportunities.
Yes, yeah, so I want to that we can put those together. That's great. Buy low, sell high. Problems are opportunities. So we're looking at the markets are down, right? And for many people, in fact, a student in our Wealthy Youth program, she freaked me out. I thought she was going to be calling and panicking. She was like, no, I'm waiting a couple of days and I'm looking at Facebook and Netflix. So the bottom line is they're on sale now. If you liked them before, why don't you like them now? Mm-hmm. So that's really the way that you have to look at. And in addition to that, you are investing through your retirement plans at work. What I want people to, and I hear people saying, oh, don't look at your statement. Yes, look at your statement. Because what I want you to see is that you're buying a lot more shares. You bought a lot more shares this month with those contributions than you did the previous month.
I got some antsy people over here.
Yeah, so I'm, you know, as a recent college grad, I'm just curious, as we think about paying back our student loans with Sallie Mae and all of those other companies, I'm just curious, is there something we should start thinking about doing now beyond just investing in our 401k at work?
Well,
we have a job.
Yeah, well, the key is to kind of get a view of what is it that I want to accomplish, mm-hmm. right? So for you, it's going to be paying off that college debt, but you have the one thing money can't buy, and I want all young folks listening to this to understand this. You have time. And so not only does time give you the ability to not only accumulate wealth, but it also gives you the ability to take more risk, mm-hmm. and that's really what you should be doing now. So don't put off investing specifically in your retirement plan, because in some cases you're going to have matching dollars from your employer, and that's like giving away free money.
What type of portfolio would you suggest for like a beginning investor, somebody just starting out? You mentioned Facebook, you mentioned a couple other things. What would a beginner's portfolio look
like? Well, typically what I believe people who are just starting out should do is invest in an index fund, which is very conservative, an index mutual fund, where they're basically gonna buy the 500 stocks in an S&P 500 index. And if you're just starting with less than $10,000, that's really where you should begin.
Hold tight 1 second. I'm gonna go to a break right now. We come back with more questions on Michelle. She's got some down there. Right here on News 1 Now on TV 1.
Hey, I'm Arnaz J, and you're watching News 1 Now with Roland Martin on TV 1. Black TV does matter, dang it.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks. Back to News 1 Now, TV 1. America's Wealth Coach Deborah Owens, Michelle Bernard, you got a question.
So, Deborah, after everything that we've been watching happening in the stock market over the last few weeks, one of the things I've noticed is particularly African-American women have been saying the exact opposite of what I heard you say this morning, which is, and what I'm hearing from most a lot of black women is, this is why I do not put my money in the stock market. So how do we sort of get over that sort of emotional, mental hurdle of sort of being scared of losing it all?
A lot of that is fear, right? And what I believe is what conquers fear is knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so the reason that African Americans in particular are so risk averse is because we haven't had that experience, right? Or someone walk us through how this process works. And so the only way that we're going to increase this confidence level is by giving knowledge. And so, you know, what I would suggest for those women is that they get some basic knowledge, read books, seminars, and that will allow them to gain more confidence. And that's why everybody's fearful.
You know, real quick, you say diversify stocks, bonds, and cash, systematic monthly investment. Explain the last one.
Okay, systematic monthly investments, that's how you're investing in your retirement plan either anyway. And if you don't have a retirement plan, I really suggest that's
Jamira.
The way to invest, right? That's the way to invest is to open up, and to your point, an S&P 500 index fund.
Jamira.
Something as little as $50 or $100 a month really will increase over time. So, good point. I do want to make this one point. The way you ride out volatility is through diversification. Now, I'm saying diversify between stocks, bonds, and cash, but the other thing you want to do is diversify within what are called those asset classes, right? So, and if you've got mutual funds, you want to have a small cap mutual fund, a medium sized mutual fund, a large cap mutual fund, because all of those different types of companies perform differently in different economic cycles, and that's how you win the game.
Folks, go to DeborahOwens.com for more information. Deborah, we appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Always a pleasure.
Quick, folks, birthday shout out. These are all the people Jameer listens to. Wiz Khalifa turns 28 years old. Rapper Slim Thug turns 35, but Lorenz Tate is too old for you. He turns 40, Jameer. And radio host Big Boy turns 46. In Jameer's world, that's considered old, even though those are people who are wise and smart. Plus, civil rights activist Ruby Bridges turns 61. Bow down, Jameer, bow down. All right, folks, join me tomorrow on News 1 Now. Can't wait to hear what Bill O'Reilly, Don Lemon, and Juan Williams got to say. They might want to Google an answer before they hit me up. I'll see y'all later.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.